And it's always great when Bernie Kosar joins us for the first of his two weekly visits. Bernie, how's your weekend?
I was a little preoccupied with all this bounty talk, but
yeah, we got to.
The kids brought me back down to reality.
We got to get to that. I'm going to guess there might have been a bounty or two on your head at some point in your career. You know.
Well, with some of the speed I had or lack thereof, I'm not sure how hard it was to track down where I was going to end up.
Right. All right. Well, we'll get to that. But first things first, let's talk about the Browns with regard to the whole handicapping of a potential trade that could be made for the second overall pick. They're mentioned prominently in a piece that appeared in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and it was in basically breaking down all the teams, Browns, Redskins, Dolphins, Seahawks, that could very well have an interest in trying to get that second pick with the idea of getting Robert Griffin III. And the most interesting takeaway, according to – and by the way, when we talk about this, Bernie, it's not because, A, either of us is convinced that this is or has any idea that this is what the Browns want to do, and, B, go after Griffin, and B, that – you know, we're sort of saying, yeah, enough with Colt McCoy, move on. This is strictly just, this was the news of the weekend, a pretty big breakdown. And quoting a league source, the Post-Dispatch, Jim Thomas, know him, the veteran writer there, says that the Browns would be, I guess, willing to give up the fourth overall pick, but not their 22nd pick in making this move. And what's kind of fascinating to me, whether that's true or not, just how much this and then there's other details, and we'll get into it with the other teams that are mentioned here, but just how much sort of information is being tossed around. And you wonder, Bernie, how much of it is smokescreen stuff this time of year. I got to believe a lot of smoke is billowing from a piece like this.
Wow, it's so true. I mean, this time of the year, before free agency and – what, 7 weeks before the draft? There's so much TBD, to be determined, that's out there that it's final article for somebody from St. Louis who seemed to be thinking it's Christmas made early for them, that they, it's a fun article to run with.
Right.
But very rarely, if you look over history of the NFL, do deals like this get consummated this early. So there are lots of things that go into it. And because the guys haven't done their pro days yet, because all the analysis of everybody isn't in, because you haven't filled holes or made free agent signings, you're not sure exactly where your levels of need and interest are in the draft just yet, that it's hard for teams to It's hard for the team who's making the trade at number two to get the maximization of what they think the fair value is. And it's hard for other teams to speculate because they're just guessing. And in the league, they don't like to guess on huge trades of this potential magnitude. So there's a lot that still's got to go into it that I think a lot of teams want to really do their due diligence, make sure they got their house in order.
And it's fascinating because the Browns and Redskins are the presumptive favorites to make this deal, whatever that means. Redskins, supposedly, according to the Post-Dispatch article, again, quoting league sources, the Redskins would give up their number six this year in a first-rounder in 2013, but they won't give up their second-round pick this year. The Dolphins are in the number eight spot. Supposedly, there would be no dealing between the Dolphins and the Rams because those two teams were in the running. And I find this part of the story maybe the most interesting and entertaining, Bernie, but the Dolphins and the Rams were battling back and forth over the chance to get Jeff Fisher as head coach. The Rams end up winning out in that derby, and it's like there's no way the Dolphins would do business with them now because of that, or vice versa.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be a factor in it. You know, Jeff Fisher has relationships with the Redskins. Obviously, they're hurt a little bit with the Dolphins. I think the thing that's going to hurt the St. Louis Dolphins trade more than anything is that I firmly believe, and again, this is just my own personal speculation,
yeah,
that St. Louis wants a difference maker for Sam Bradford in his third year because he's had next to zero weapons to throw to. So I think they want a difference maker like Cincinnati got with A.J. Green there. And if they drop past a certain point in the draft, and it's been debatable as you talk to teams as to are there – and there's no for sures in the league or in the draft, but there's pretty damn close.
Mm-hmm.
And teams like a lot of teams think there's maybe four, five, possibly six of those guys in this draft. And St. Louis wants one of them. And history is showing that just to get a bunch of good guys as opposed to one superstar difference maker, it's better to get that one superstar difference maker. And I think St. Louis adheres to that strategy. So I think they are, I don't want to say bluffing, but going to be asking too much, not really serious, to drop farther past four or possibly six.
Bernie Kosar joining us, as he always does, here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. The other teams, again, mentioned in this piece that could be in the market for a quarterback, or presumably are, the Seahawks. They're picking 12th overall. Again, a far place to go from 12 to second to get Robert Griffin III. And the Arizona Cardinals picking 13th, same deal for them. It doesn't seem practical, or at least in terms of what they'd have to give up to get there. And therefore, their places, as referenced in this St. Louis Post-Dispatch piece, their position in all this is considered much weaker. But the other dynamic to all this is that any trade that could be made could not be made until March 13th. Now, that's coming pretty quickly. That's also it's the start of the league business calendar year. It's a time when you can also sign the free agents when the free agents hit the market. So that dynamic will be happening at the same time. We may find out where Peyton Manning will land at that point. If it's presumed that he's not going to be a Colt any longer, Matt Flynn, where he might land as a former Packer. And that will help clear up, I guess, some of this discussion as well. But it looks like the Rams, and again, being in this business, Bernie, you know how it works, where people will put out information, leak stories, whatever, utilize the media contacts they have as much as possible to try to force some action, try to turn up the heat a little bit, and in this case, try to get one of the teams, whether it's the Browns or the Redskins or one of these other clubs, to do something between now and next week.
Yeah, I think they would like that. But again, I think they're the type now that bought into all that BS combine talk. But we're going to get three number ones and next year's number, number twos and mid-round picks and late-round picks and possibly a veteran player or two.
Right.
And that just isn't going to happen before the free agency starts. That's just not going to happen. And for them to make a trade when they originally thought unfairly, I think, or unjustly, or whatever the correct word is, that they were going to get three or four first or second round picks over the next year or two, it's just not going to happen in that quick a time frame. And they're not going to be able to want to go back to themselves internally and externally and just say, hey, I got a number one this year from Washington, I got a number one next year, and I got a fifth round or sixth round pick. They had their expectations set so much higher. So I think it's going to wait out. It's going to be probably a little game of chicken towards the end as
yeah.
we get closer to the draft. And teams have to look at their own team, just how you prefaced the question with us in Cleveland beforehand. You know, we still have to see, where this all fits, and is it what we want to do with our future, and I think the Redskins are going to have to make that decision too. And we joked a little bit last week about Peyton Manning, and is he healthy? We'd start seeing him throw. Well, we got an obscure camera view of that briefly over the weekend as we get closer to March 8th. If that was a plant, which it kind of maybe was, or knew that he would be seen, he may be getting better to where we may see a little more of that. If Matt Flynn is like people think,
right,
and if Peyton Manning is healthier than people think, that's going to give some of these teams like Washington and the Dolphins, you know, another avenue to explore, and they could get those guys without giving up 2, 3, 4 top-tier picks. They're going to at least want to. They're going to at least want to check into that.
Interesting how that video just conveniently slipped out there. And then the timing.
Me and you felt like Nostradamus.
Right.
Talking about that over the last week or two. Before March 8th, you know, they're going to something needs to be seen.
Yeah.
Because those thoughts that we were talking about are going to go through people's minds as to his health and ability to throw if they see nothing.
Yeah, you needed to see something or see something, and it's just subtle enough to, sort of pique your interest. Is it him? Are you sure it's him? Chris Mortensen from ESPN confirms it's him. On and on, but it just makes the whole thing fascinating. All right, we're just getting started. Much more we're going to talk about with Bernie Kosar, former Browns quarterbacking great, here on Cleveland Browns Daily. It's driven by Liberty Ford and brought to you by Madden NFL 12 in stores now. EA Sports, it's in the game. Here we go. And we're back with Bernie Kosar. And Bernie, a subject that really burned up the phone lines of talk shows and other places, has been through the weekend, is the bounty story involving Greg Williams when he was the defensive coordinator of the Saints, but really all his previous coaching stops, I guess, before him joining the Rams as defensive coordinator. And the issue being, you know, what exactly do we make of all this? First, I want to get into the issue of bounties, and you playing at the time that you did in the NFL. How prevalent was that sort of thing? I know in some cases a lot of wink, wink, nod, nod stuff went on, but I know you've had your experience with this. Why don't you enlighten us as to what the bounty situation was from the Bernie Kosar perspective?
Well, it's something that, you know, it appears probably harsher than it really is right now. There's been this going on through the history of time in football. And whether you look back, even in high school, the Portland Spartans getting stickers for big plays. You look at the Ohio State getting Buckeyes on your helmets. Down at Florida State, the Seminoles getting and stuff. It's kind of a tradition for making turnovers, making big plays, making game-changing, momentum-changing plays. And it's kind of something that's players look up to and is in the culture of the locker room, and you really, really, as players and coaches, look forward to this in the film the next day after a game so that you're one of the guys that helps your team win or causes big plays positively for you. Unfortunately, I think it's gone a little too far when you hear, like, hey, if you take Brett Favre out of the game, like that 1990 or that 2009 NFC Championship game, mm-hmm. when he was at the Minnesota Vikings, he took a beating against the Saints. But they really appeared, most of them, to be clean hits. And whether it was a bounty or not, I think most of those hits would transpire or happen anyway. So I never thought that, other than maybe with Buddy Ryan's Andre Waters back in the 80s, there was guys purposely trying to hurt somebody and ruin their career. And it's not like I'm singling him out. He said he was trying to do that. But I don't think guys want to purposely end guys' careers. Now, do they want to maybe knock a guy out with a clean hit? Like, most of those were clean hits. As ugly as the Kurt Warner one was that they keep showing in the B-roll as this story goes on, you know, they ended up getting his head in front, hitting him between the 1 and the 3, mm-hmm. and making sure that his head was in front. And those are good game-changing plays. But unfortunately, the timing and the way the game is evolving with player safety and lawsuits and stuff, this is probably going to be a bad one for the Saints and for Greg Williams.
Yeah, again, he's admitted publicly, quoted as saying that it was, quote, a terrible mistake, and we knew it was wrong while we were doing it. I mean, that alone opens up a lot of room for him, for the implication of what might transpire from league sanction or what or whatever? And is it focused on him? Does it go broader than that? Does it involve the Saints? I mean, these are the questions, I guess, that are going to be asked, or, again, the other teams, the Redskins, when he was there as defensive coordinator, and the Washington Post reporting that similar bounty program was run there, similar program supposedly when he was head coach of the Buffalo Bills. So, and now some speculation about the Tennessee Titans, where he had been working with Jeff Fisher previously. So it'll be interesting, and whether this is about him being suspended or fined or something, and if it's kept to, you know, if it's kept to Williams and doesn't go into what, say, the head coach might have condoned in the case of the Saints, Sean Payton, that, you know, those are other interesting elements of this, Bernie.
Well, that's where the interesting thing to me comes into play. First, I wanted to throw up at that Matt Bowens, the defensive back in 2003 through 5, talking so much about stuff that I really believe is within players and coaches, now, and it's in-house.
Let me insert this. He's a former Redskin DB, and he wrote a column about this that appeared in the Chicago Tribune. Okay, go ahead.
And he's a guy who says he doesn't think it's a big deal and doesn't think anything was really that wrong with 99% of it. So why are you then talking about it is one issue from something seven years ago. But the thing that I think is going to make this a sustainable issue and a real punishable offense is that allegedly the league came after the NFC Championship game in 2009 and did an investigation or an inquiry about the Saints and asking, has there been any pay bounty type payments to players? Has there been any of this type of conduct? And supposedly the Saints said, no, there isn't, nothing that we're aware of from the Sean Payton, Mickey Loomis, the general manager for the Saints perspective. But they, I think, also added, but if there was or is, we will see to it that it doesn't continue and it ends right away and it's not an issue ever again. So late, I think 3 or 4 months ago, somebody else came forward and said that, one, they were lying, and that did happen, and it has continued. And there's lies kind of the basis of the Ten Commandments, or the 11th Commandment within the NFL. Thou shalt not lie to the commissioner in the league office. And when you do that, that's a whole other set of situations that end up making, I think, the pain and punishment that much greater.
No, you're right. It just ramps it up. It just makes him angrier, and it's sort of like poking a stick in the face of the bear. We're visiting with Bernie Kosar, his regular visit here to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Bernie, so on the teams that you played, and again, playing for the Browns, you know, playing for the Dolphins, playing for the Cowboys, you've been in different locker rooms, different places, whatever the thought process was, did you, because the question I'm asked repeatedly by a lot of people who are either they're fans of the game, not necessarily people particularly close to it, but what they've been struggling with this story is that by nature you're out, your job as a defender is to go after the guy with the ball. And, you know, hit him. You do hit him with a lot of force. You try to make the play, whatever it is, to separate him from the ball, to force something that will help your team, your defense. What more is needed, and what? Why would this take it to another level? The sort of, you know, taking out of a guy, couldn't that just be done in the normal course of business?
Well, I think in the normal course of business, one of the issues has been something that we harp upon, at least I harp upon constantly, that guys have gotten bigger, stronger, and faster. And these hits and the quickness of them and the physicalness of them has just really exponentially grown over the last, you know, 10 years, 20 years or so, just because the guys are such great athletes. I look back to how guys like Ronnie Lott are in the Hall of Fame because it was his territory. It was his turf in the middle of the field. And if you intimidated a receiver, we've always heard the famous phrase growing up, alligator arms. If you intimidated him, he was leery going over the middle. He had a higher percentage propensity to miss the ball, drop the ball, not make the play as right. the game wears on.
Right.
Look at the end of the – look at how the toll could have possibly affected Brett Favre in the 2009 game. He makes the horrific throw across his body to the middle of the field to throw the interception as they're going down for the game-winning field goal at the end of the fourth quarter. You know, who's to say, we're never going to know, if that accumulation of hits added to that mistake to make that turnover, and was that going to happen anyway in the course, the natural course of the game, because the winner was going to the Super Bowl. And I guarantee you, that an extra $500 or $1,500 for a hit wouldn't plus or minus making you do it or not do it, as opposed to the chance to go to the Super Bowl. So if it's in you to have that ability to make a play and to make a hit, whether there's a bounty or not, in a game of that magnitude, I really think you're going to make that hit either way.
Back in the late 80s, and again, there's different reasons. Now, bounties in this context are referred to, you know, taking out a key offensive component to the other team, usually the quarterback, to help give your team the better chance to win. Okay. There are other kinds of bounties that have been known to exist, and one focused on players who did not play by the rules, who were setting out to hurt other players, who were considered, quote, dirty. I co-authored a book in the late 80s with a guy named Conrad Dobler, and I know you remember him. He was an offensive lineman. St. Louis Cardinals, when they were the St. Louis Cardinals, played for the New Orleans Saints and then finished his career in Buffalo. We got to know each other in Buffalo. And then he had, just after his retirement, he did those Miller Lite commercials, the troublemaker commercials with, John Madden had started and the other guys who were in those, Ben Davidson, so forth. Anyway, so I did go on a commercial shoot with him, but in the course of that, we do the book, and he recalls how a former Raider, and I think it was Phil Villapiano, because they were teammates in Buffalo after Phil had left the Raiders. Phil had told him that, hey, look, we had a bounty on you. When the Raiders played the Cardinals in the 70s, there was a bounty to take you out. And he said they had put up $100 to take, you know, that was the prize. And Conrad was highly insulted. He said, $100? That's all I was worth? He said, I had to be at least worth $150. I mean, come on. So that was the big back in the day. But a bounty centered on a dirty player.
Well, I find it incredibly interesting and I love the history and tradition of our game. It's partly mainly why it's such an awesome game today. But you're exactly right, Conrad Dobler, Phil Villapiano, who was phenomenal to me when I was a kid trying to get started in the league. And
former Bowling Green guy.
Yeah, for him to spend time with me and just talk and all that and learn certain things, it was awesome. But there's no doubt that the cheap – we glorified the Jack Tatums, the Conrad Doblers, patronized them. We put them up for sainthood.
Connie got on the cover of Sports Illustrated as the dirtiest player in the league.
Yeah, and we love these kids. Yeah. He made more money doing Miller Lite commercials than he got playing football.
Right.
So
right.
those guys, so we kind of maybe set up a generation of guys where we unfortunately got what we asked for, because as kids growing up, I think there's nothing wrong with that, because that's what the guys did, and that's what we glorified, and we love those big hits and that stuff. And some of them got rewarded with Hall of Fame inductions. It's incredible. So today's game is not even close in terms of cheap shots and dirty hits and fights like there was 20 years ago. I mean, we're not even close to the now – unfortunately, because, again, the guys are bigger, stronger, and faster, the magnitude of these collisions is more. But in terms of the actual events, it's not even close.
Yeah. Well, great stuff to talk about. It's going to continue, I'm sure, to be a key topic of conversation. And, Bernie, thanks so much for your time, and we will catch up with you at the end of the week.
Okay, sounds good, Vic.
All right, he is Bernie Kosar, the one and only, joining us, as he always does, on Cleveland Browns Daily. It's driven by Liberty Ford, brought to you by Madden NFL 12. In stores now, EA Sports, it's in the game.